Hi, I'm Jeremy Kirk with Intel 471, and welcome to another edition of Studio 471, which is our ongoing video series. Cyber threat intelligence is still a relatively new field, but there are a lot of questions to ask when launching a new program, such as what are the best data sources, who are your stakeholders, how do you get beyond just normal indicators of compromise? And ultimately, the question is, can you prove that a CTI program demonstrates value by preventing security incidents? With me today to work through the answers to some of these questions is John Focker, who's the head of threat intelligence at Trellix. We're also going to discuss an interesting program that's designed to improve the maturity of cyber threat intelligence programs. Thank you very much for joining me, John.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. It's great to be here.
So just to tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do at Trellix.
Oh yeah, of course. So I lead threat intelligence at Trellix. What that means is I have a research team of researchers all over the globe, and we monitor the threat landscape. That could be from just like yourself at Intel 471, some underground chatter, all the way up to nation state behavior. So we track a lot of cyber criminal and nation state behavior across the globe with the goal of disseminating this intelligence that goes into our products. So we try to stay ahead or uncover the latest techniques from the threat actors and translate that into better protection methods, as well as that we help our paying intelligence customers with reports and everything else, just to get a better understanding of what goes on and what the adversaries are doing. Yeah, I have a team all over the globe, 24/7. I'm based in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. And before Trellix is a merger between McAfee Enterprise and FireEye. I came from the McAfee side, and before that, I worked with the Dutch National High-Tech Crime Unit. That's their the FBI equivalent of their cyber teams. And in a way, way, way past, I was in the Dutch military in the Marine Corps.
Excellent. And so I want to talk about CTI programs and how organizations structure them. So what's your just kind of broad sense of how organizations these days are approaching threat intelligence?
That's an excellent question. And I very often depict it as a bell curve, where you see that often new technologies and intelligence in particular is pretty well adopted in the top percent of the bell curve. So when you talk to large financial institutions, government entities, they all have an intelligence program because they can either they're constantly under attack or they see the value of an intelligence program. Whereas I still think that there's a lot of value for intelligence for the majority, so the middle of the bell curve. However, what we see in a day-to-day basis is that a lot of these organizations are actually struggling. Like, how do I use threat intel? How can I make it work for me? And is it difficult? Because when we look at the top percentile, they usually have larger budgets, more headcounts, so they can get away with raw materials, raw products, building integrations themselves, setting up teams themselves. And in all honesty, the smaller organizations don't have that luxury. However, in my opinion, they always will always benefit from threat intelligence if they can use it to their advantage. So that's where I can see that the field is moving towards, that we open up the playing field to a lot of also smaller, relatively smaller. And when I say small, don't get me wrong, it's still like 50 million net revenue. It's a
Yes.
reasonable amount of money that there's still these organizations could be up to 500 people. That's on average, even more. But it's just their core focus is not for intelligence.
And you've got, at the low level of the pyramid of pain, you've got those, indicators of compromise, hash values, things that are easy to ingest into most modern security products. When you look at organizations and they want to kind of go a little bit higher than that, what's that next step that you see organizations successfully taking?
Yeah, you can say you go up on the pyramid of pain. It's very interesting when I dig back, and probably a lot of your listeners would attest to this, especially if they come from an intelligence or law enforcement background, and when they work with intelligence and they came into the cyber field. So I came from the outside into the cyber realm as well, and I was shocked that they called intelligence was atomic indicators. That was called intelligence. I was like, that's not really intelligence. It will help you, but that's the lowest of the lowest that you, yeah, that's the baseline that you want to achieve. And we still see that a lot of companies and a lot of organizations approach intelligence as just a feed of atomic indicators. Quite honestly, in the past, I had to fight for this within our company as well, that there's individuals that didn't understand that it goes much further than that. And yes, that's the basics. It's like, I have something, tell me what it is. Is it bad or is it good? That these are the basic trivial questions that you might have. But there's so much more, because when we look nowadays at threats, it's not only about malware, it's about a complete behavior. And if you take a breach, let's say a ransomware group, a very simple ransomware group, they follow several stages to compromise their victim. And it doesn't start with the ransomware. That's the coup de grace, that's the final stage. So
Yes.
there, all this behavior happens in the network or even outside of the network of the victim. And there's a lively economy going on, and I think our listeners know everything about it. And these are all detection opportunities. These are all protection opportunities. So if you understand what goes on and what a threat actor or a group needs to do to achieve their goal, you can set up those safeguards. Well, when we talk about it in this way, it's much different from atomic indicators. We're actually talking about more of a kill chain and more about behaviors. And then you could say, like, okay, maybe the next step would be, can we detect these behaviors? So when a,
DTPs.
yeah, the TTPs, you go up, that when the threat actor group launches, let's say PowerShell or AD-Find or ArcLong, can I detect it? Do I have anything in my network that prevents that from happening? And then I think that's still, when I look at it, it's still a very, how would you say, narrow focus.
Yes.
So if you would say it in medical terms, is you're ill, something's wrong, and there's a diagnosis. You're being diagnosed with something, and there's a cure. So it's like, I'm hurting, I go to the hospital, the doctor looks at me and says, I do X, Y, or Z. And that's very much the situation we're in right now with all the EDRs, the XDRs. We're tying in all these different sensors, which can tell us exactly what is wrong, or we get a better or a clearer picture of what is happening, and we get our re response or remediation playbooks, our SOAR playbooks, and they tell us, okay, you need to do step X, Y, or Z, and you're back on track. However, what I'm seeing is that the intelligence that we know about these groups, there's so much you can do even before they target you. If you know that they're in their victim group, either you're a victim or you're in manufacturing, you're in the same sector, the sector vertical, or you're in a certain geo. There's so much you can do beforehand to learn about how these groups operate, and then mirror that to your environment and say, like, well, actually, yeah, we got some work to do, or we don't have our group policy set up right, or we need a program to monitor our vulnerabilities, or external attack surface monitoring, or we need a solid threat intelligence program. And I say it in the broadest sense of the word, that intelligence will help you uncover these weaknesses before the threat actor uncovers them for you, because that's essentially what it is, right? Especially with ransomware, it's just a very costly pen test exercise where, yeah, they also do some data loss protection, prevention, but they do it on their own
Right.
terms, and you have to pay a hefty price. But that's
Right.
where I can see that, yeah, then you're no longer doing that race for the IOCs as much, which is still important, that
Yes.
baseline. But you're using those behaviors, and you're actually taking that time, the proactive time that you have in your organization, to say, look, okay, but where are we? Where are we standing? And that's, and a lot of people that when I hear people speak about SecOps and all these things, it's all alert fatigue, and it's they paint a picture like there's constant alerts. Yes, there's always things going on, but there's also structural programs. A SecOps team has to justify investing in certain technology beforehand, and then you want to do a trial, and you want to see if you catch something and all that stuff. But threat modeling, because that's essentially what we're talking
Yes,
about, that could help structure or set it up for an organization and to say, like, hey, these are our common threats that we're going to face. How our con security controls, are they up to speed? Do we have the right security controls, or are there any gaps? And gaps can be covered by the controls that you have, by
Do you see
certain
this?
other settings.
Sorry, just a question for you. Do you see this as a like it's kind of a staffing problem then too? Is that there's not enough people to do this sort of analysis to look at like the MITRE attack techniques for a particular ransomware gang and see if they have the defensive controls in place to do this and do that type of analysis.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways, right? The longest time, the whole industry has focused on a lot of indicators. So when I look at feeds from anyone, from us or from others or third party feeds that we use, it very often it talks about atomic indicators. So yeah, if that's the game you're playing, you're not upping the you're not level upping the playing field, or you're not making it more interesting.
Yeah, you should have it at base level. I mean, definitely it is
Yeah,
a, you know, it is
exactly.
effective, but it's not effective for very long, and that's the problem. Yeah.
And then, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it does come with staffing. So we see that the more mature organizations, like the larger banks and whatever, they have an intelligence team. And these individuals spend every day working through these reports and going through these exercises, which, mind you, can be really costly. It will cost a lot of time. However, I'm a strong believer is like us, even us as a threat intelligence or CTI provider in our fashion for our customers. We have a team, and we disseminate to that level that is needed to help with the threat modeling to see like, okay, what else can we distill from these attacks that it's not useless when the IOCs dry up, but you can learn from the behaviors. And that's just an internal drive of going up the pyramid of pain for ourselves, and then making it machine readable and making it more easily to ingest in our security products or in products as a whole. And that's what I'm missing in overall in the industry is like you have the threat intelligence providers that are very like for instance actor-centric. They work really much on the TTP, so they're actually in the top of the pyramid. And then you have the bottom ones that the automated feeds, that's well automated. That's the data structure is very set up, very well thought out, so it's easily ingestible in multiple products. But we miss that link in the middle. Very often we see that the very capable threat intelligence provider that have actor-centric intelligence and a lot of the behaviors and the things, it's written down, but it's not always machine readable. And what I've missed, yeah, and it really would help if we make things more machine readable and then match it towards different vendors. So like, let's say
Can
there's
you
a
explain to me what you mean by machine readable then? What sort of data do you mean?
oh yeah, of course. So very often, let's say I'll just take a blog from some other company or a company or our company. You read through the blog, and when I read the blog, my mind goes, okay, they do technique X, Y, or Z. They use these tools, these command lines. That's great, but it's in my mind. And it's written down in a PDF. However, it needs to be written down in a machine readable format that you can match it to your defense rules. So that's how we operate within Trellix is I try to disseminate the intelligence to a level that I can actually match it to our XDR rules. So when a XDR rule triggers, and it's a behavioral-based rule, but it's used by a window by a certain API or a certain tool and exhibited a certain command line, we can go back and say, based on the MITRE TTP, the MITRE techniques and the tactics, and based on the
Yes.
tool used and based on the command line, we can say, well, we've observed this in these other cases with these threat actors. And it's not saying it's this threat actor, but we say this is the cases that we've seen in the past. And by the way, actually, the threat actors in these cases used these other tools to gain their objective. Because essentially, when you have an alert, if something triggers from a behavior, A, they're, if it's not your external attack surface, but it's internally in network, it could be that they're already in. So they're somewhere in
Sure.
their attack chain. So it's very important for you to understand what other tools they might use to their disposal, because everybody has habits and they use things. If things work, they will use it again, and work through that attack chain to figure out like, okay, if I jump in at moment X, okay, what can I expect? What other types of attacks or other tools can I expect along the way? And is there anything I can do now, because I'm almost in IR mode, to set up these safeguards to make it more difficult for them, or to set up more like trip flare. So if they do this technique or they use this tool, it stands out and I can find them. So that's the place where I think we should be when we talk about intelligence. But it's good if you have a team with a lot of people, but it's extremely hard to do if you have only a small team. So that's why I want to make it machine readable, so it's ingested into a product or a tool that can aid this. It can give you that advice.
So you could have like a launch of PowerShell, maybe two other things that happen, something that happens in a registry and go, well, right, this is the condition of this particular ransomware group. If this happens, Send an alert. I don't know. Take some other action. Whatever you want to do after. Yes.
Because way too often, if I talk to all my coworkers and my practitioners, and this is what it boils down to, I can name a tool, and if you're familiar with ransomware, you would be like, or for instance, with an attack, you would say like, oh, the hairs on the back of your neck will stand up, and you're like, AD find.
Right.
That's a very common tool, and then every practitioner in our field be like, oh, if you're not running that yourself, if you're not doing that, if you don't have that in your environment. And you're pretty sure your admins don't have it, you need to take a look because you are under attack. Somebody is enumerating your Active Directory, and that is a phase, a discovery phase of your attack. So you still have a chance. That feeling from, oh my gosh, something's going on, you need to take action. That is a different feeling from, okay, this is malware. But that feeling, we need to translate that feeling from us as experts towards all the organizations that we try to protect. And that feeling needs to be translated. And if we can't replicate ourselves. So we need to make sure that we can translate effectively that gut feeling into a machine-readable format that goes into a tool or whatever to scale up this type of stuff.
I want to talk to you a little bit about a really interesting project. Intel 471 is participating in this. You're working on it as well. It's called the Cyber Threat Intelligence Capability Maturity Model. And so this is a document that's being worked on by various CTI experts in the industry. And tell me a little bit about what this model is and what its purpose is.
Yeah, I mind you, Mike DeBolt, a personal friend, he asked me to participate as well. And it's a phenomenal group of industry experts when it comes to the CTI field. The title is a mouthful. I have to hand it to you. I try to avoid pronouncing the title every single time I can. But essentially, what it is that we see. Okay, we have, when we look at the CTI playing field, we have specific tools, there's TIP platforms, there's providers, there's all kinds of folks, and there's courses for practitioners. So you have SANS and many others. They offer specific knowledge. And we see a lot of people in the CTI teams, they're very focused on harnessing their skill, getting better technically and more and deeper on that stuff. However, that is just going deeper into the technical knowledge, where it's just as much. Essentially, what you're trying to do is you need to make sure that the organization that you're trying to protect with your intelligence is getting that value, and that you're there to protect the business processes to make sure that business can continue and can thrive. And what you want to do is make sure that your intelligence supports that in the right way. So it limits risk to the organization, all these things. And what we've noticed as year-long practitioners is that very often, because we have CTI analysts, practitioners, leaders, or whatever, are very focused on the technical skills, but they're not always focused on, okay, but how can I position the CTI or my team or a program within the organization that it's set up for success and that there's also a path to maturity? Because it's very similar to cybersecurity. Everybody wants to go from that ad hoc phase where, oh, there's a general alert and I have to do full forensics to figure out what's going on, to a more, let me say, SOC 3.0 adaptive resilience phase where you do the things like threat modeling that we spoke about, where you are on top of things and you're outcome driven, you have a business focus. So you know, okay, this is our company, we're in this part of manufacturing, and whatever I do within the SOC is aligned with achieving that goal. And we would love, that's the drive that we have for this document, is building up a similar model, because there isn't a model right now for intelligence. And if we take intelligence seriously, not only from the practitioner side, but also like, okay, this is vital information for an organization to get into control of their threat posture, then we need some level of maturity, and it needs to align with the organizational needs and with like the C-level. So there's a lot of different domains. A lot is layered in like a baseline level, and then you have one,
Yeah, we've
two,
got
and
11
three. So
different
it goes
domains.
deeper.
So just to clarify, there's 11 different domains. They're based on the Cybersecurity Capability Maturity Model, which was published by the Department of Energy. So you've got domains like identity access management, asset change and configuration management, so threat and vulnerability management. So these are basically the different stakeholders you'd have in an organization that a CTI program would want to try to serve. And then it also has the mission for CTI for that particular domain, the data sources are where what you would draw on. So what I like about this is that it really lays out really clearly like where you get the data, who you're supposed to serve, and what you're supposed to help, right? And as you say, this didn't exist before then.
Well, you have to model from the Department of Energy, and that touches upon some intelligence, but there wasn't really an intelligence-focused model like this that can give you that guided path towards maturity that shows you, because a lot of these teams, they empirical, they figure out over time, they figure out what works and what doesn't, and then it really depends on what type of management you have or how the engagement is, and then. And sometimes even with certain, I've had organizations where the success of a CTI program was dependent on that one incident that showed the return on investment. And that's like, wow, you're investing all this money and then you hope that you have one incident to show the value of what you're doing. That's like, no, you need to be able to show the value without that incident because you're actually taking precautions of not landing into that incident. And that's really hard for organizations as well to show the return on investment then. So that kind of drives it towards like we all these practitioners, and when the CTI industry is maturing, you will have the managers, and we're in the same boat. So from a collective group, we're all like, okay, we need to set this up because this will guide that path towards integration within a larger organization. And it's so similar to what the cybersecurity industry has gone through in the last 10 years. It's very similar, where it was a technical problem. And now when I talk to our customers, our large customers, it's a board level discussion. The CISO is talking to the board. And if guess what? If you have investors and they invested in your company, they want to know what the risk is. They're reading the newspaper. It's front page news. They want to know if their investment is at risk. So these are things that are signs of an industry maturing, and CTI is nothing different.
I remember when we spoke in preparation for this, you said something really interesting to me. It was along the lines of you can be the best practitioner in the world, but if you're in an environment where you don't have stakeholder engagement, you're going to be the lone wolf, right? And when you're writing these reports, it's going to land on somebody else's desks. But when at the end of the day, if you're not able to demonstrate value, if you're not, you can't just bring out the zinger incident, right? You have to show consistent value that this is consistently protecting an organization. Then you're going to be in the next round of cuts, I think, is what you said as far as redundancies.
True. It's also about positioning. Like, if you show the value to the organization, you're not a nice to have, you're a need to have. And like we discussed in the preps, like for me, like the worst type of intelligence is a team that does all the work and that report either it doesn't resonate with the right stakeholder, or there's no action, or it lands in a desk drawer where it just collects dust and it just goes into the shredder 2 weeks after. Then that's a waste of effort. And that's even worse than having nothing at all, because that means that there's a conflict within an organization. You have a group of people that are doing their best, but somehow it doesn't land with the upper deck, if I might say so.
Or
And
I
that
was
to
going to
me,
say the report is subpoenaed by the SEC at some
that could also be the case,
point.
yeah, if it's still there. And then you get the I told you so type of
There you go. Well, John, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Totally, yeah. It's great talking to you, and it's always fun to talk shop. And yeah, I'm privileged to be invited.